Welcome to Auk Live On Air. I'm your host today, Ashling Wehner. Auk Live On Air is a podcast from Auk Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Auk Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, sponsored by Eli Lilly, we had the pleasure of speaking with Matthew S. Davids, MD, MMSC, about the FDA approval of pirtobrutinib for patients with previously treated chronic lymphocytic leukemia or small lymphocytic lymphoma. Dr. Davids is Director of Clinical Research and Associate Director of the CLL Center at Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, as well as an Associate Professor of Medicine at Harvard Medical School, both in Boston, Massachusetts. On December 1st, 2023, the FDA granted accelerated approval to pirtobrutinib for the treatment of adult patients with CLL or SLL who have received two or more prior lines of therapy, including a BCL-2 inhibitor and a BTK inhibitor. This regulatory decision was supported by findings from the CLL-SLL cohort of the single-arm Phase 1-2 Bruin trial, in which the agent elicited an overall response rate of 72%, all of which were partial responses. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Davids discussed the significance of this approval, key efficacy and safety data from the Bruin trial, and guidelines for pirtobrutinib use in clinical practice in the CLL-SLL patient population. Speaking about the recent approval of pirtobrutinib in CLL and SLL, just to start off, what is the significance of this approval?
We were very excited to see the approval come through for pirtobrutinib in the double refractory post-covalent BTKI and post-BCL2 CLL patient population. This has clearly become a growing unmet need in the field. We have patients now who have been on covalent BTK inhibitors for several years. Many of them now have also been exposed to venetoclax, and we're seeing more and more of these patients progressing and coming to us and needing new treatment options. And unfortunately, based on some of the retrospective data that have been published recently, we know that these patients tend to have poor outcomes with other standard therapies. Some of these studies have shown median survival in the range of only 3 to 6 months. So seeing the really promising data from pirtobrutinib coming out over the last couple of years, it's really exciting to see this drug now approved for this patient population.
What were some of the key efficacy findings in the CLL and SLL cohort of the Bruin trial?
So first of all, it's quite a large cohort of patients. I think in the most recent analysis presented at ASH, there were over 280 patients who had all previously been exposed to a covalent BTK inhibitor. And many of these patients, upwards of 40 to 45%, had also been exposed to the BCL2 inhibitor, venetoclax. And despite this heavily pretreated nature of this group and enrichment for other high-risk markers, over 80% of these patients responded to pirtobrutinib. I think really looking at the waterfall plot is informative as well, because you can see the lymph node reduction really in nearly all patients. Even if they didn't quite meet criteria for PR, most of the patients did have some benefit in terms of lymph node reduction. And as we'll talk about also with excellent tolerability of this drug. So I think the other thing to be mindful of with pirtobrutinib is that although it's a highly active drug and there are very high response rates in this difficult to treat population, the median PFS for the population studied here of post-covalent BTKI is in the range of about 20 months. So it's certainly much better than other options that we have available right now, but especially for younger patients, that does also leave room for improvement. And so I think studying pirtobrutinib combinations, I think moving pirtobrutinib up into earlier lines of therapy where it may be even more effective, certainly going to be important aspects of the investigational plan going forward. But also, I think we need to continue to do research for new mechanisms in CLL. We're already seeing some promising developments in terms of BTK degrader drugs that have entered clinical trials. And so I think it highlights a need that accrual to clinical trials in CLL remains crucial for us to be able to make progress for our patients.
What is the safety profile of pirtobrutinib in this population? And were these findings consistent with previous safety reports with pirtobrutinib in other populations?
So one of the interesting aspects of pirtobrutinib is that it is a very selective BTK inhibitor, really with very few off-target effects. So even just sort of from that initial principle, we would expect the drug to be very well tolerated in patients. And now as we're seeing the data mature from this Bruin study, it really is confirming what we would have hypothesized. And so in general, the rates of AEs are quite low, particularly grade 3 or higher treatment-related AEs are very low with pirtobrutinib. Certainly see some neutropenia, as you might expect in this population. But when we look at the AEs of interest with BTK inhibitors, things such as bleeding issues, atrial fibrillation, hypertension, they're lower than what we're accustomed to seeing with the covalent BTK inhibitors. Even, for example, AFib flutter in the range of 1% to 2% with pirtobrutinib. I mean, that's really what we'd expect as sort of a background rate in this older patient population. Unclear if pirtobrutinib even increases that risk at all. Now, it's true that we don't have head-to-head studies yet of pirtobrutinib with the other covalent BTK inhibitors, and so I think time will tell if this favorable AE profile holds up. But I think some of the signs that I think it will hold up are the very low rates of dose reduction and needing to stop therapy treatment discontinuations with pirtobrutinib. And, you know, that's with follow-up now with many patients 1 to 2 years, even some patients 3 years on pirtobrutinib. I think it's very reassuring that this is a very well-tolerated drug, and certainly the most recent results that we've seen are very consistent with what we saw from the earlier studies of pirtobrutinib.
With this approval, where might pirtobrutinib fit into the CLL and SLL treatment paradigm in your practice?
It's interesting to see how the label came through for pirtobrutinib versus kind of how it's appearing now in NCCN guidelines and how we're thinking of it as the investigators who helped to develop this drug. So the FDA was a little bit stringent in having the label be for double refractory patients, so post-BCL2, post-covalent BTK inhibitor. And that certainly is a population where the drug will be used quite widely. But I think also the NCCN guidelines reflect the potential for broader use of pirtobrutinib, and potentially even as early as the second line of therapy. And you can imagine patients who are having issues with covalent BTK inhibitors, whether it's progression or tolerability issues. These are patients where pirtobrutinib could actually be a very nice option, particularly if it was a patient who maybe had trouble because venetoclax, of course, does require frequent visits initially, dose ramp up, close monitoring. So maybe there are some logistical issues for a particular patient. Maybe that's why they went on a covalent BTK inhibitor in the first place. So it might be very nice to have that option of pirtobrutinib in the second line setting to keep the patient in class and really preserve that efficacy of BTK inhibitors. Technically, that would be an off-label use, but it is being supported by NCCN guidelines. And I think it's nice for patients to have those options.
What is the rationale and design of the confirmatory BRUIN CLL-321 trial?
So the BRUIN 321 trial is comparing pirtobrutinib to the investigator's choice of the PI3 kinase inhibitor idelalisib with rituximab or to chemoimmunotherapy with bendamustine and rituximab. So, you know, I think that this is an interesting design. It's clearly registrational in nature. Those are, you know, control arms that have been used historically to treat relapsed refractory CLL. This is actually a very similar design to the ASCEND study that led to the approval of acalabrutinib in the relapsed refractory setting. I think it will be a helpful data set for pirtobrutinib in this setting. Hopefully it will be a confirmatory data set that will lead to full FDA approval, because right now pirtobrutinib has an accelerated approval in CLL. So I think that'll be a very useful aspect of this study. The other study that I think is very interesting with pirtobrutinib in the phase 3 setting is the BRUIN 322 study. So this is comparing pirtobrutinib in combination with venetoclax and rituximab, so a triplet therapy, versus a control arm of the doublet venetoclax and rituximab, the so-called Murano regimen. Again, these are relapsed refractory CLL patients, and I think it's going to be very interesting to see if pirtobrutinib can be developed as a time-limited therapy as it is in this study. It's being given as a 2-year fixed duration therapy. And I think it'll be very helpful to see how much additional benefit we see from pirtobrutinib in addition to the ven rituximab. From a tolerability standpoint, I expect the triplet to be well tolerated, so it may actually add significant benefit from an efficacy perspective without too much additional toxicity. So also very excited to see the results of that study when they're eventually available.
In that vein, are you or your colleagues involved in any other CLL or SLL research that aims to address remaining unmet needs in this population?
At our center, we've got a major interest in tackling one of the other unmet needs in CLL right now, which is Richter transformation. And so for the last few years, we've been running prospective multicenter clinical trials that are investigator-initiated and are looking at venetoclax in combination with chemoimmunotherapy regimens. The most recent one that we're doing is venetoclax with R-CHOP. This does seem to be a very active combination. The CR rates are in the range of about 50% compared to what we'd expect with historical controls of chemo alone, which is more like 20 to 30%. We're seeing median overall survivals in the range of around median 20 months, again, favorable compared to the 6 to 12 months that we're accustomed to seeing with chemotherapy alone. The challenge, though, with chemotherapy-based treatment is that many of our CLL patients are older and frailer and have comorbidities that make it difficult to administer chemoimmunotherapy. We often see infectious complications as well. So one of the hot new areas in lymphomas is bispecific CD20, CD3 antibodies, and we just recently opened a clinical trial at our center looking at glofitamab, one of these CD20, CD3 bispecific antibodies, specifically in Richter transformation of CLL. And so we're excited to recruit to that study and try to improve outcomes for this very difficult to treat population.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air, sponsored by Eli Lilly. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.